And my name's Stan.
I'm Anne.
Nice to meet you.
So you took up photography when?
I've always loved photography, but I turned it into earning a living.
That's
at
right,
60.
Yeah.
I enrolled on a day course.
What, college?
Loved going to college.
It's good you can retrain and do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about working, learning, saving and making the most of living longer. Phoenix Group is the UK's largest long-term savings and retirement business. Search Phoenix Group Living Longer.
Do you hear that? It might sound like nothing to you, but it's actually the sound of nuclear, wind and solar energy. At EDF, we're busy generating more British zero carbon electricity than anyone to help keep future energy costs down for everyone and help cut UK carbon emissions to nothing. Sound good to you? Find out more about our zero carbon generation at edfenergy.com/helpinbritain.
Hey guys, we're back. This is the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done the last episode. A lot going on around the world of soccer. Everything from cups, competitions, drama, you name it. There's always so much going on. Kartik, let's start off talking about the USA against Jamaica. CONCACAF Nations League semi-final on Thursday night. A really inspired performance, I think, in the second half by Gio Reyna. What's your thoughts on how the US did, and specifically Gio Reyna?
Well, I mean, truthfully, I was watching Open Cup at the same time, so I wasn't paying that close attention to this match. Reyna is a guy that doesn't play very much. He's a part-time player, so... and against CONCACAF, against a weakened Jamaica squad. Let's not forget, four players, by my count, maybe it was five Jamaican players left camp earlier in the week. Several prominent players left camp. I mean, you can turn it on and play well for 45, or actually he played for 75 minutes. Guy, when he played at Dortmund, I haven't seen him play much at Forest. I saw him come on in one game. The other Forest games I've watched, he hasn't played. But at Dortmund, in the first half of the season, I think he was lousy, right? I mean, he would look gassed when he would play extended minutes. It's a chicken and egg situation. I know, guys have to get game time to be fit, right? They have to get their reps. But for some reason, he's not at two different clubs. So, and then obviously the other takeaway is Haji Wright, who wasn't even in the team. Who's been playing very well for Coventry. I've been watching Coventry a lot recently as they pursue top six in the championship and this FA Cup run they're on. And so that was kind of an inspired pick by Berhalter to bring him in after the injuries. And that was certainly an impact. And by the way, some real kind of New York links there. With Haji Wright having come through New York Cosmos and having played in NPSL and NASL for teams in New York, and then also Gio Reyna's obvious connections to New York, because oftentimes I say, like, there's not enough guys that are being produced in New York City or in the New York area for high-level national team play. Like, if you compare it to other similar cities in other countries, right, London, Paris is not a good example, but London, Munich, Madrid, right, Milan, those types of places, you have much higher concentration of those national teams coming from that, like, central financial center area. And in the U.S., that's not the case. But these two guys, although Haji Wright's from California, I should mention, but he played in New York. These two guys both obviously were decisive yesterday.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Gio Reyna. I mean, honestly, I think he's the most creative player the U.S. men's national team has. And we saw that in the second half when he came on, his first touch of the ball, a beautiful pass. And the U.S. almost scored a goal immediately, being involved in two of the assists, laying the ball through for Haji Wright, even against a a weakened Jamaican side, but overall, I think, I mean, the future is Gio Reyna with this U.S. men's national team. And I think, honestly, too, I've watched a lot of commentary this season, too. Yeah, and previous seasons, as you have done, Kartik, is that Haji Wright, I think, to me, should be the regular U.S. men's national team striker. One of the first names on the team sheets after Gio Reyna. Gio has got to get that fitness back. A lot of it's the match fitness. But I see a lot of positive signs from the both of them. The interesting thing about this match, I think in many ways, this USA against Jamaica match, it ended up being a good endorsement or advertisement for the EFL. I mean, you had players, I mean, we've mentioned Coventry already. A couple of players on the Jamaican side also who play for Coventry. But you had other players on the Jamaican side that play for Charlton, Oxford, Sheffield Wednesday, and Swansea. So all together, between the U.S. men's national team, Haji Wright, of course, and then the Jamaican side, a good night for the EFL, which is kind of ironic when you think about it, especially with, for you know, a big international match like this. So where do we go from the here, Kartik? FA Cup, what are your thoughts from this past weekend of FA Cup action? To me, one of the greatest FA Cup games of all time in recent memory, Manchester United against Liverpool, an all-time classic. How did that go for you?
I don't agree. Like, the thing I'm having more and more difficulty with, I guess people like entertainment, and I get that. Same thing, U.S. Open Cup midweek, like the high-scoring games were the games that people were like, ah, this game is great. When in fact, like, some of the 1-0, 2-1 games in Open Cup I thought were better quality games. I've seen this both in the Premier League and FA Cup recently. When there are constant defensive errors, there are constant bad giveaways, midfield is being bypassed regularly in these matches, we're calling them great games. More games where you're seeing kind of more concentrated midfield play, Aston Villa games, for example, where they play a very high line, right, defensively. People are not saying, oh, those are fantastically entertaining games. So, no, I mean, I thought that the I personally thought that if we're just talking about the games themselves, the Coventry match, Wolves, was better. I thought it was a more well-played match than Man United, Liverpool. But I my takeaway on the FA Cup this past weekend is how poor the coverage was from ESPN. You know, how we've been accused in the past, this podcast, of being biased towards ESPN, but I'm seeing signs that they've just mailed it in on this competition, just with the way I just felt it was very cheap. I can't find a better word than that. I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, the coverage wasn't what it was in previous years.
Yeah, I mean, with the FA Cup, I'm not tuning in for the shoulder programming, so I'm not expecting anything from the pre-match or halftime or post-match. It's going to be just like with the Bundesliga, right, or La Liga. It's going to be a lot of talk on topics that I probably already know about or have my thoughts on. I'm not going to learn anything new.
But what about the audio during the game?
Well, that's been a problem for years, right? It's been a problem for a number of years, probably like 3 or 4 years, where ESPN choosing to use commentators, put them in a studio instead of putting them in the stadium. And then see the audio, the crowd noise is muted. And then you hear the commentator fine, but the actual crowd atmosphere sounds pretty bad. What I've been doing also for a lot of the Premier League matches too, even though the Premier League matches, we know that the commentators are at the ground. But for a lot of the FA Cup matches, I mean, I'm listening, same with the last World Cup, I'm listening to radio commentary, the audio, and then watching the visuals of watching the game on TV or streaming. And for me, that's my best, I mean, kind of compromise. We're in the best of both worlds.
That might be why you have a different take on FA Cup than I do. I think that probably explains it. But I don't think most viewers are savvy enough to go find the radio commentary. I'm not trying to insult
right,
it, but
right.
I think that's just general. So yeah. I'm saying, like, people like this Liverpool Man United game because of the bad giveaways and all the scoring, and it was dramatic, right? How it ended was dramatic, no question about that. But I think at the same time,
the funny thing, just to chime in for a second, the funny thing is the Liverpool Man United match, that one I watched in quotation marks on radio. So I was driving, I was traveling. So I listened to the radio commentary of that game. It was on Talk Sport, which sometimes with Talk Sport, even if it's a mediocre game, the commentary is dialed up to like 10 or 11, where it's like everything's like so intense. This is the best game ever. And then watching the highlights later, but listening to the radio commentary and then talking to a lot of other people too that watch this game, they're all saying like, this has got to be one of the greatest FA Cup games in recent memory.
Yeah, cheap plug here, shameless plug. I'll be on Talk Sport. If you're listening on Friday, I'll be on Talk Sport tonight with Danny Kelly. Tonight, our time, Eastern time, 9:45, to talk a little bit about League One and League Two, and non-league day in England, which is Saturday. So that's and it's Saturday their time when we're doing the broadcast. But on your point, I think that's a very good point, because I think I may have enjoyed this game more if we had gotten the natural sound from ESPN. So let's contrast this with the Spurs match, which had been on a little earlier on NBC. There is a natural ambiance and sound and feel you get from whether it's NBC with their commentators at the ground or if it's Premier League productions, right? So what happens later in the FA Cup, later rounds of the FA Cup, and the FA Cup has already been watered down these last few years because of the Premier League insisting on certain changes to the competition. But now you've got a situation where when you have Premier League games running simultaneously with FA Cup matches, which you have in these latter rounds, you can flip from one broadcast to the other and see the difference in quality. And I've been hit in the past by listeners to this podcast saying I'm very biased towards ESPN. I'm not. And in fact, right here, I'm seeing a clear difference between NBC and ESPN. And okay, that FA Cup game might be dramatic. It might be amazing. But I'm probably, when games are going on simultaneously, which they were this past weekend, going to opt for the Premier League match or going to opt for NWSL when it was on. It ran concurrent with one of the FA Cup matches, NWSL match, USL, MLS, anything that has like some sort of natural sound with the broadcast over that FA Cup match. And that's not a good thing. In the morning, the Chelsea-Leicester game, I didn't watch because I was watching Premier League on NBC. And then the Bundesliga on ESPN. And for whatever reason, ESPN doesn't have this problem with Bundesliga matches. The sound, you get the ambiance of the stadiums. I guess that's, they're using the Bundesliga productions.
Exactly. And for those games that, you have Derek Gray that's willing to fly over to Germany to actually be in the stadium to call a game from there, even if they're going to be using just ESPN commentators themselves. But 9 times out of 10, it's the world feed and the commentators in stadium for that sound, for that experience. I mean, credit to Major League Soccer, right? With MLS Season Pass, they have all of their commentators at the stadium calling the games from there. So the sounds, is good. The visuals
are better. MLS Season Pass is the standard. I mean, that's the gold standard in terms of quality of broadcast. It's tough to achieve that. I'm not saying that the FA Cup needs to be at that level, but even the midweek US Open Cup games, I was at two matches myself, so I wasn't watching all the streams at the same time. Like I saw some people on social media had like 10 computers open watching, all these Open Cup games simultaneously. But the games I watched were tended to be the late games, right? The West Coast kickoffs, because I was physically at East Coast games. I thought like the sound was better than ESPN had for Liverpool Man United. I mean, I'm not joking. I mean, granted, these are like stadiums with 4,000 seats and that creates an atmosphere, but there was more natural sound. Now, some of the broadcasts were bad, right? Like the Capo Des Moines game was a disgraceful broadcast. But some of the broadcasts, if they were done right, were better than ESPN's FA Cup broadcast, which shouldn't happen in the U.S. Open Cup first round when they had 2 weeks to put together the broadcast. Really. I mean, I think that's ESPN, very low standard. And also, Chris, compared to ESPN's other coverage, I don't see this problem with La Liga games. And like you just said, we don't see it with their Bundesliga games. I think on this competition specifically, they've mailed it in for some reason.
Yeah, on that audio, I would say definitely yes. I mean, on other things, as far as having Alexis and Nader Manoa and kind of that on-pitch I mean, pitch side, you mean analysis or pitch side reporters. I think they do a good job, but no, you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, the audio, I don't know. I mean, and that's the thing though, too. That oftentimes it's John Champion and Stuart Robson. Both of them are based in the UK. Both of them, you mean, it'd be just as easy for them to go to the stadium rather than to go to a studio and do the commentary from the studio. But yeah, the audio, yeah, and this has been a problem for years, right? This has been so, I mean, you and I notice it. I'm sure a lot of our listeners notice it. We've seen that in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com.
I'll tell you where people complain about it. When go ahead. England plays games at Wembley, even if the commentators are on site, there's a sound issue. So it felt a lot like that. I never, you know, you never expect venues like Anfield or the Molyneux, any of these venues to be like that, that kind of like that, because we're so used to those venues from the Premier League and how we interact with watching the game on television from those venues. When the semifinals and finals were at Wembley and we have the same effect, I guess it impacts me less because I'm used to England games at Wembley being lifeless and thinking you can almost hear you know, other than hearing the England bland, you know, play God Save the Queen or God Save the King now, I guess it would be, you know, you don't hear much. So maybe that's part of it. It's like we're so accustomed to these grounds from the Premier League or from the Championship that it seems like it's lame when you watch FA Cup matches there. And by the way, the League Cup is not broadcast that way. So ESPN has the League Cup also. But those are midweek games, like the stands are half empty for most League Cup matches or two thirds empty, but it still feels like there's more of an atmosphere when they broadcast those. So there's something very wrong with their FA Cup coverage.
Yeah, a number of years ago, listeners, Kartik and I went to Gold TV Studios in Miami for a behind the scenes kind of day in the life of Gold TV covering soccer, and Gold TV is still around for those people who are curious, still producing, still broadcasting soccer games, mostly Portuguese games. And we went there on a Saturday morning, and this is back when the Bundesliga was on Gold TV. It shows you how long ago it was. And there we are in the kind of the main studio. And we were watching a Bundesliga game being televised, and there was a guy sitting on the floor with a little box and a little dial, and he would be increasing the volume of the crowd noise. He'd be like, okay, let's put it up a little bit more so we can hear that noise. I think that's almost what ESPN needs in 2024 take that guy off the floor and just increase the crowd noise, because the difference between radio or at the stadium and then listening to it on ESPN Plus or watching it on ESPN Plus is ginormous. It's a huge difference. And I mean, this can be for any league, any cup competition, any soccer game. The crowd noise makes a massive difference when you're watching a game.
And this is what I noticed Vista did at the two games I was at this week, US Open Cup. They didn't have as many cameras. It depended on the local team. But they put the microphones strategically where there were fans. So there were, you know, a good number at the first game I was at on Tuesday night at the Villages. So that would have been good anyway, the atmosphere on TV. But the second game in Daytona, there weren't many people, but they made sure the microphone was where there was a crowd. Yeah. So you could hear those people who watched the stream of Frenzy versus Club de Leon probably thought there was a good crowd and a good atmosphere. And even when I went back and watched some of the highlights, I saw, like, after the goals, you could hear some ambiance, even though there were like 500 people at the game. So it's also how you set this stuff up, which again, ESPN knows, but they're just flipping the world feed on. But that doesn't make sense, because IMG does the world feed for all these other things we're talking about.
Well, it's not the world feed, though. It's not the world feed. So it's basically the audio track, the live audio, but then John Champion and Stuart Robson talking over it, so that they're trying to mix it together, and it doesn't sound that good. No, I mean, that's terrible. The thing, though, too. So, sometimes having that crowd noise, you mean, be right up with the mics and hearing that. Sometimes it can be a negative, though, too. Like, last weekend's Inter Miami against DC United game at Audi Field in DC, towards the end of the second half, you were hearing all sorts of F-bombs from the crowd as far as their rage and being upset at the referee about some controversial decisions that went into Miami's way. So, and oftentimes too, we've heard that too, where it's been either, I don't know, in the past, it might have been Aldo White or Peter Drury or John Champion saying, like, we apologize for the fruity language. And a half the time, we never heard what the language was. At Goodison, it seems to come through more. You can hear the shouts and abuse. those are picked up.
Yeah, Goodison is a unique environment. I mean, in fact, I've talked to Premier League referees who say that was the worst place to ever officiate a match. That is true, because I've been at both Miami FC games in person, and we'll see this week they're at Orange County, so it's on Golasso. I'll have to watch it on Golasso channel. But I've heard from people who watch the games that Antonio Nocerino, who's our manager, our former AC Milan player, that you can hear him cursing on the on what is a live television broadcast on linear television in South Florida. So
local TV.
Yeah, on local TV, on our local CBS channel. So I think that's unavoidable if you want to get the ambiance. But I guess the FA Cup avoids that. So, I mean, for me, the question is, I know how important the FA Cup is to a lot of fans in Britain, but I think as this situation has evolved over the last couple of years, you have a lot of US-based fans who are like, FA Cup is a throwaway. We're more concerned about the Premier League. And even when I say to Arsenal fans, hey, you keep winning that competition, you won, what, 4 of the last 9 or something like that. It's like, it just wasn't, the experience wasn't the same because they're interacting with their clubs via television. It's very different when NBC, even, after the match, they don't pull away to Rebecca Lowe for a minute or two, right? You get the feeling of what happened. And I guess that's not happening with the FA Cup. And I'm really kind of pleased for our cup competition, US Open Cup, that maybe they picked up on some of these cues, because the coverage this year, the buzz on social media, even the amount of effort US soccer is putting into promoting the US Open Cup seems to be at a much higher level than it was in the past. I think part of that might be seeing like how not just the whole MLS thing, we're not going to get into that, but the way like these cup competitions have faded in other countries because their FAs are not promoting it or the TV coverage isn't right, etc. So cup competitions, I think in general, face a major challenge. This is why the DFB, they have insisted that there be a level of coverage of the German Cup that is equivalent to the Bundesliga, right? By all their broadcasters that they sell those rights to around the world. In the case of the FA Cup, maybe this will change when it's bundled, right? Yeah, in the future. But right now, there's just a huge drop off in it, and that's not a shot at the ESPN studio team. I want to make that clear. You're right. Alexis Nunez, Nena Manoa, they're pitch side. They're doing all of the things that ESPN has always done. It's just the match coverage itself, especially when these matches don't go on in a vacuum. There's other things going on. You can very easily switch within ESPN Plus to a Bundesliga match at the same time or a La Liga match. Chances are you're going to do that because unless you're supporting one of these two teams, because it's just like it doesn't grab you because of the audio.
Yeah. So, the FA Cup this year, I've been entertained for sure. I mean, Maidstone United, their run that they had, and then beating Ipswich, that was an incredible game. And then, of course, Coventry City now in the semi-finals to play Manchester United. The actual action on the pitch and the drama and the magic of the cup, right, it has been there, and just as good as ever, in my opinion. Before we get to, I definitely want to talk about US Open Cup in more detail, and we've got some great feedback and questions from our listeners about that too. Obviously, Kartik, you can talk at length about that competition too. But what about the title races in Europe? Which one is appealing to you most right now?
Well, I, I mean, in terms of the competition, it's England. But in terms of just the story, it's Germany. Because I've been really guilty of this. And you and I visited this club several years ago, Bayer Leverkusen, where I called them Leverkusen like everybody else. Because and even when we were there, they were honest about the season. They got the three cup finals, right? They were in the Champions League final. They were in the German Cup final. And they were leading the Bundesliga the final day of the season and lost the title to I think it was actually Werder Bremen that we were not by. But there's this legend of Leverkusen, yet they are 10 points clear. And this was another thing. Okay, so that Liverpool-Man United game is going on. The same time, Freiburg, who I thought this was a match where maybe Leverkusen would slip up, especially considering how much trouble they had had midweek in Europe. They were very fortunate to advance, and Freiburg had been bounced out by West Ham, so I thought they'd be motivated. That match is going on at the same time on the same broadcast for ESPN+. The atmosphere, the ambiance, everything was great, and Leverkusen won. So I think they're, knock on wood, I think they're almost there, although Bayern is playing better of late. For me, the top four race is most interesting in Italy. Atalanta is a team that I've really liked the last couple of years under Gasperini. Bologna has crashed the party, very surprisingly, and they played really well. Inter are going to win the league. They're really good. Milan has played better of late. Pulisic, a big part of that. Let's give him some credit. A big, big part of that. But, you know, Napoli is still kind of in the mix. Roma kind of still in the mix. Obviously, Juventus. So there's, I think Italy has more of a top four race. I'd say England has more of a title race. Germany has the most compelling story. Like in Spain, it doesn't matter to me if he wins, you know, those two clubs. Although I guess if Xavi goes out as the champion, it would be neat. And then what's the other league? France. Yeah, that's not interesting. I would say let's split the award three ways. England, most interesting title race. Germany, best story. Italy, most interesting top four race.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it has to be the Premier League. I mean, the top three clubs. I mean, third place is separated from first place by 1 point. You look at Serie A, third place is separated from first place by 17 points. The Bundesliga, third place is separated from first place by 14 points. So, I mean, to me, it's, I mean, in terms of, I mean, who knows if it's Arsenal, Manchester City or Liverpool, they're going to win the title race. And also even to, even in kind of the top four spots to Aston Villa and Spurs seeming to kind of wiggle back and forth as far as, you mean, Spurs will go through a tough patch, Villa will do well, and then vice versa. Sometimes it's the opposite, as well as all the other teams kind of competing in that kind of top eight, top 10, lots of movement there. But yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's been the closest Premier League title race in a decade.
Teams that win all the time, though. I mean, that's the thing. Leverkusen's not a team that wins all the time. And Inter is a team that turned over half its roster and has major financial constraints. And you said they're 17 points clear or whatever of third. I mean, those to me are better stories than Arsenal or Man United or Man City or Liverpool winning a title. Like, those teams win all the time.
Yeah, to me, they're all good stories. It's just like some stories are better than others.
yeah. And it's all your own perspective, right?
Right,
it's
not exactly. I'm sure we have listeners too. They're probably saying like, "Hey, Chris, what about whatever league it may be, the Turkish league, or what about other leagues, you know, South America or the Mexican league or Major League Soccer?" It is all subjective, right? A lot of it depends on which team you support, also, and maybe which league you gravitate to more. I think at the end of the day, I mean, the reality that I see is that there's so much competition. I mean, you were saying too before, Kartik, about FA Cup games being played at the same time as Premier League matches. And then you had FA Cup matches being played at the same time as the Bundesliga title race, so on and so forth. But we've had in the last couple of weeks, we've had Champions League matches happening at the same time as a Premier League match. And I think it was on one of the Tuesdays in the Champions League match where all the games were kind of progressing slowly. There wasn't really much going on. And the match of the day during that same window was Luton Town against Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Kind of a, you mean a 4-3 thriller. I mean, action-packed, incredible scenes. And that match was being played because of Tom Lockyer's, the incident that happened with him, where the game had to be postponed and rescheduled. So from time to time, you do get that too, where you have other games happening at the same time. I'm sure UEFA don't like it that way, but you have to figure out a way to squeeze those games in order to finish the season on time.
So maybe this is where I am mentally. Like, I watched that game. It was a great game. I was unfortunate for Luton, right? That might be the game that costs them, right? That might be the game that ultimately relegates them. 3 goals clear. I know you have different priorities, Chris, so you might have been focused on Champions League. I didn't even realize Champions League was going on until I saw scores on Twitter. Because I was like, Luton's playing Bournemouth today. So even though I'm watching less Premier League than I used to, that's just the top teams. Like Luton, I'm watching every game. I mean, I'm really into that team this year. Bournemouth is a team I watch. So I knew that match was happening. I was prepped for that match. And I forgot about Champions League, quite frankly. And I bet, like, a lot of people, I didn't see the television numbers, but I'm sure a lot of people were watching Luton Bournemouth in the U.S. that weren't watching Champions League. I think that's just general. The Premier League does very well, regardless of what it's on and what it's up against in this country.
Yeah, and we'll get into that in a little bit too, I think, in the list of mailbag when we talk about U.S. Open Cup. Because in some ways, it's almost like, I feel it's almost like when two soccer worlds collide. And like, both you and I are massive soccer fans, right? We try to consume as much soccer, either more so for you in person, right? Especially with the U.S. Open Cup, and reporting on a lot of the games and the stories and doing the interviews. And then my side, which is more TV streaming and all the schedules and interviewing some of the executives, but trying to get the exclusives and stories on what's happening there. So more so of late, we're watching different things. Not always, but we're watching different things. But I think part of it, too, is what this illustrates is that not just us, but soccer fans in the US are watching more soccer than ever. But we're all not watching the same thing anymore.
Yeah.
For the most part. 10 years ago, I think most of the audience would have been watching Premier League matches, MLS and Liga MX games. Now that almost every single match available worldwide is available to us through streaming.
That's a classic example. The one you just talked about. I'm almost positive you were watching Champions League and I was watching Liga.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was watching both. But yeah.
Okay. So
I was watching both.
I even in my mind. Okay, so I probably subconsciously knew Champions League was going on. It was Wednesday, but I didn't process it until I think it was not even social media. It was when I decided I would go back on FootMob, the app, and see like the events in order, because Luton had blown this 3-0 lead. What were the player ratings? And I saw, oh my gosh, there were Champions League games going on at the same time. It didn't even, and NBC, this is something we've talked about before, Chris. NBC is very just Premier League focused. So it's not like from the NBC broadcast, I got, hey, PSG scored in this game, right? They don't tell you that.
Yeah. The Premier League, I mean, NBC specifically are very much like, for the most part, they don't talk about League Cup. They don't talk about FA Cup. They don't talk about the Championship. It's all Premier League. And now and again, a rarity, will they mention some other competition if it is Champions League. And it's almost like, oh, they just mentioned the Champions League. It exists. Which is very much like Major League Soccer, right? Major League Soccer is so focused on MLS. I mean, usually they don't mention USL at all.
Nope.
Now and again, you might hear the word mentioned. They're certainly not going to mention the US Open Cup, which we'll get to.
On that note, this weekend's going to be really interesting on Apple, since one of the Apple TV stars also starred for a USL team in Open Cup this weekend, this past week.
Yeah.
And I can
almost guarantee off camera they'll mention it and joke about it, and then as soon as the camera goes on, it's like, okay, all right, big game tonight in MLS. We've got Colorado against Real Salt Lake or something like that, right?
So for those who don't know, Sasha Kleiston decided, and we know how he feels about the Open Cup. He was one of the most vocal people when MLS first pulled what they pulled. Signed a contract to play with the one of the most vocal people on social media.
Well, and then he retweeted, and then he said something else that kind of like negated what he said.
Initially he was. So then he signed a contract with the Des Moines Menace, which is one of the best USL League Two teams, historically, you know, a powerhouse at that level. And went 120 minutes in their match, first round match, and had an assist, you know, a classic Clyston kind of lobbing Pirlo-esque ball, and scored a penalty, the decisive penalty in the penalty shootout. I don't know how they avoid talking about that on air, but I guess they will.
Yeah, we shall see. We'll be watching Saturday night MLS 360, I'm sure. But going back to my point before too, Kartik, is that now that practically every game from around the world is available to viewers in the US, and a lot of those, I mean, kind of are games played in the US at lower levels also, a lot of the soccer fans such as ourselves are not watching the same games anymore. And perhaps the one league that is most common, that's probably more so the water cooler conversation on a Monday morning, the commonality is probably the Premier League, where at least if you say like, hey, did you see that Manchester United game, or did you see that Chelsea game, or whatever it may be, or Luton, do you see what Luton did? I mean, that's the commonality, versus if you said, you mean, did you see what happened with San Jose Earthquakes, or, you know, or Tampa Bay Rowdies, or whoever it may be, you might get kind of a strange look or kind of a confused look. That's where we are, kind of when those two worlds collide, where there's so much to choose from, that sometimes it's hard to, even for this podcast, sometimes it's hard for us to kind of figure out what topics can we talk about, where we can both share our analysis, viewpoints, opinions, whatever they may be, where it's games that we've watched together, you mean separate, but we're actually the same games or the same experience. And you mean, it's a good thing in many ways, but the negative I think about this is that, you mean, if it's NFL, right, there's not a lot of people watching CFL, or, NFL is it. So you have most of the American football fans talking about what happened in the NFL, and they can engage in that dialogue. With soccer, it is so splintered in terms of all the different possibilities of all different leagues. Any given Saturday, there's at least 80 to 90 live games available from around the world. And if you look at an NFL Sunday, there's, I don't know, 10 games available. So the majority of people are watching, you mean, kind of those, one of those 10 games, or maybe a couple of those 10 games. We're watching, you mean, up to 90 on a Saturday, and then Sunday comes along, and there might be like, say, 50 or 60 games to choose from. So it makes the soccer universe look smaller. But if you were able to combine all of that together, I think it is much greater than a lot of people believe it is. Kartik, before we move on to the listener mailbag, because we definitely want to talk about US Open Cup in more detail, and maybe we'll get into some of these things that MLS have been talking about recently. But definitely want to give you an opportunity to talk about the unfortunate passing of a man that has contributed quite a lot to soccer in the United States.
Yeah, just an absolute shock. Joe Baroni, who I knew very well, was an associate of mine, I'd say, you know, a pretty close acquaintance of mine, passed away in Bergamo. He collapsed. He's the GM of Fiorentina currently, or what was the GM of Fiorentina, collapsed before the Fiorentina-Atalanta match. That match, like the Luton match, like we talked about, had to be postponed. It has major Champions League implications, Atalanta in fourth, Fiorentina in eighth. And Joe passed away 2 days later. Joe is was an incredible man. He ran a amateur team in New York, or in Brooklyn. And I first met Joe in 2010 when his team joined NPSL. I had just been hired by NASL, and I was pushing the idea of NASL linking up with NPSL, because I said USL, who was our competing league, has all these, you know, they have their own incubator. They have lower divisions below the USL championship, or what they were calling USL Pro at the time, we need to work with NPSL. Eventually, that relationship was consummated. I had left the NASL by that point, but Joe was the guy who consummated the relationship, and he actually ended up working in the NASL as well. He became the president of NPSL, and in that role, I interacted with him frequently. I consulted for NPSL clubs. I covered the league, so was interacting with him as the president of NPSL, and actually did a panel, a couple panel discussions at sports business conferences that he came on as a panelist to discuss soccer in the United States and the grassroots game and how much was going on outside of MLS. Joe didn't like Major League Soccer. He didn't like the business model. He thought that there were much better players, or not much better players, but there were so many players that were falling through the cracks, so many potential investors falling through the cracks that wouldn't invest in MLS because of the format. He took NPSL to the level it's at now, right, where it is, it's an amateur league, but it's a prominent amateur league. And we even saw the kind of teams they produced this week in U.S. Open Cup. Joe went to Fiorentina. He got hired by Fiorentina when Rocco Commisso bought the team in 2019, and has been the GM of Fiorentina the last few years and built them from a club that was fighting relegation to a club that made a European final last year and is fighting for a European spot this year as he passes away. So truly great man, had a huge impact on grassroots soccer in this country. NPSL, which I know a lot of our listeners have NPSL clubs they probably follow in their local areas. NPSL is what it is because of him. And then he, as an American, went to Europe and built a traditional club, but a club that had all kinds of problems recently, into a club that got to a European final. So a really special story of an American being successful here in the lower divisions, not in MLS, in the lower divisions, then going to Europe and replicating his success there and taken from us all too soon. He was 58. So thank you, Chris, for the opportunity to talk about him. But man, I hold in high esteem and just was shocked this week by what happened.
Yeah, our thoughts go out to his friends and family. Okay, let's move on to listener mailbag. And as promised, Kartik, US Open Cup, there's a lot of feedback. So first up is Brett. Brett says, in relation to the US Open Cup, the USSF, so United States Soccer Federation, press release says, quote, the history-filled tournament is conducted on a single-game knockout basis and open to all professional and amateur teams affiliated with US soccer. Is that just not true anymore? Asks Brett.
I guess it's actually, I mean, it is true, but I don't know how to characterize what MLS teams not playing in it. In fact, I don't know how that's going to be explained as we get to the fourth round of the tournament and only 8 MLS teams enter at that stage, how it's going to be explained. I mean, it was tough enough this week explaining why there were reserve teams, MLS reserve teams in the tournament and why they were starting in the first round, starting the same round as amateur teams, by the way, which was U.S. soccer's way of punishing them in a way, I guess. But I maybe it's not an open, truly open cup anymore. It's open to all open divisions, I guess. And it's not necessarily open to all first division clubs, I guess. Let's hope it's a 1-year thing, because actually explaining that in that kind of language that Brett puts it in is going to be very difficult if this is a permanent thing.
Well, that's the thing, though, too, about this press release. And this came from US Soccer to announce once it had all been officially ironed out, which was on March 1st, MLS tried to abandon the tournament in the middle of December. It took 2.5 months of mismanagement, I think. You might disagree, Kati, but by US Soccer to actually get all the pieces together. And we talked about that in the last podcast, where I was really just frustrated about how messed up the whole US soccer system is in general, in terms of leagues competing against leagues and just so much disorganization. But that press release, they buried the news that MLS was not going to be competing for the most part in that in the US Open Cup in the 7th paragraph, which really should be the first paragraph as far as, kind of news-wise. But just from that press release, I highlighted a few of the things that they had said. They said this is what US Soccer says, features the most matchups ever between amateur and professional teams. And that may be true, but without MLS in there, it's definitely a factor, a negative factor, in my opinion, negative towards MLS in terms of them not competing. And then the other part of the press release they mentioned too from US Soccer, in a historic shift for the tournament. You mean, so kind of talking about all the changes they were making to this tournament. I mean, I guess in some ways too, I mean, US Soccer is in a tough position where they're trying to save face, trying to, you mean, turn this into a good thing as far as all these changes, which have been, again, forced by Major League Soccer. But going back to Brett's point too, is it not true anymore? Well, US Soccer is open to all professional teams. Now, whether those professional teams decide to actually participate in the tournament is a different matter entirely. And that's got nothing to do with US Soccer. That's all to do with Major League Soccer. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's spin, right? It's PR. It's trying to make positive of negative situations. And I guess from a PR point of view, even though it's kind of corny, the way that the press release was written, you mean, I guess that's their way of spinning the story. Next up is Tim. Tim says, I love the Open Cup, but I can't believe all the outrage. Watch some of these games and you'll see very empty stadiums, lack of interest, and a tournament struggling to get TV deals. For all these people complaining online, you're the issue. It's funny because all these anti-MLS Euro snobs will jump at the chance to point out, this is why I don't watch yet, but will support a team from Europe who is actively trying to create the Super League. Is MLS wrong? Obviously, why can't you just leave it up to the teams to send their reserves? On the other side, they are not wrong. US Soccer has failed this tournament for years. Maybe this is the wake-up call they need to make it better. And Kartik, based on that, Tim sounds like a fan of an MLS team who might be, hey, what's the big deal? Trying to deflect a little bit here. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, there's a lot in there to unpack. A lot I agree with and a lot I disagree with. So let's take it point by point. I love the Open Cup, but I can't believe all the outrage. Okay, well, there's a lot of outrage for obvious reasons. That speaks for itself. I'll watch some of these games, and you'll see very empty stadiums, lack of interest, and a tournament struggling to get TV deals. Okay, so yes, you see very empty stadiums in some matches. You also see packed full stadiums in other matches. Lubbock sold out last night. Vermont sold out the other night. The match I was at the Villages, and the team was telling me we only had 2 weeks notice, and we had to get a stadium because the stadium we normally play at, we weren't able to use, and that also affected their play because they normally play on grass. They played on grass for 10 years, and they moved to a turf stadium for this game. But they had a decent crowd. So it's a mixed bag. For all these people complaining online, you're the issue. I agree with that to a certain extent. It's funny because all these anti-MLS Euro snobs will jump at the chance to point this out. This is why I don't watch. Yet will support a Euro team who is actively trying to create the Super League, LOL. I agree with that completely. I don't like that hypocrisy. I don't like the people who say, I won't watch American soccer because it sucks. I won't support the team that plays 5 minutes from me because it sucks. I'm a Man United fan. And then complain about not the system in this country. Is MLS wrong? Obviously, okay, we agree with that. But what? Okay, here's the key point, Chris. But why can't you just leave it up to the teams to send their reserves? Right. You can leave it up to the teams to send their reserves. That's fine. But MLS, but don't say anything. MLS made this public. They said, we want to withdraw from the tournament and send our reserves instead. They could have just been in the tournament like normal, entered in the fourth round of all the teams that are in Europe. In continental top, CONCACAF, they enter a later round, a round later. So it could have just been those teams end up sending their reserves and they register their reserves. It's MLS's own roster rules and MLS's own desire to make this fight public that created that. So sure, MLS teams can send their reserves. They're perfectly entitled to do that. But then they've been entitled to do that in the past. But then they made the issue public. They made the issue, hey, we want to send our reserves because we put our teams in a reserve league where they're not getting relevant matches against other reserves. So we want them to get these matches and we don't want our first teams to compete. They're the ones who did that. So that's the key point. And let's see, is there anything else here? U.S. Soccer has failed this tourney for years. No, yes and no. Okay, U.S. Soccer has failed the tourney for years, but MLS was managing the tournament through Soccer United Marketing. What we saw this week, Chris, and I know you noticed this too, we saw better graphics than ever. We saw more online presence than ever. We saw full match previews and match reports on U.S. Soccer's website. We never had that before. We saw highlight clips clipped right away by the Federation and put on Twitter. We never had that before, okay? So MLS, when they managed the tournament, never did that stuff. U.S. Soccer, now that they're managing the tournament, is doing it. The graphics have been great. They had full graphic packages for every match. That was never the case before. You know, you would have to, if you were covering these matches, you'd have to, like, go on Canva and make your own graphic. If you wanted to write a match report and put a graphic up. So all of this stuff they're doing. Now, there are people who are saying, well, it's because MLS raised the awareness of this and U.S. Soccer now is reacting to that and they're putting more money and more resources into it. Okay, maybe there's some truth to that. But also, MLS managed the tournament for 18 years and they never did this. So I think the Federation... So the last point on this, Chris, you can say MLS kicked them in the teeth, and so now they're raised the awareness, and and it was also impressive considering they had a national team game last night, but yet U.S. Soccer Federation was still churning out stuff about this competition because they run this competition, and in fact that national team game was run by CONCACAF. But I'm told that U.S. Soccer had planned this all along, and they were ramping things up. Anyway, and MLS chose to go public when they did because U.S. Soccer was going to really kind of embarrass them with how well they were going to present this tournament. So a lot there.
Yeah. What I would say is that so from the U.S. Open Cup this week, I would have liked to have watched more. And the reason I didn't watch as much as I would like to have watched, I watched the Miami United game. That was great. An amazing goal. That went on SportsCenter, which was incredible when you think about it, right? Because it's hard for MLS to get on SportsCenter, but US Open Cup game, even one of the goals is on ESPN SportsCenter. But overall, I mean, to watch the game, you had to either go to the US soccer website and watch it through there, or the USL soccer website, or MLS soccer website. I would have preferred to watch these games on YouTube. If they're on YouTube, I can watch them on my television easily. Yeah. I can watch them on my phone easily. If it's on these websites, yes, I can cast it to my TV set, or I can. There's so many different ways to do it. But it's a few steps to get. So make it as easy as possible to watch these games. So if they are going to be on YouTube, don't put them on unlisted. Make them available through the website. Or through the YouTube channel, so that anyone can watch these games. So it makes it easier. So I can sit down on the couch or sofa with my family and say, hey, let's watch this game because this is pretty crazy. You've got a team, that's based out of a burrito shop in San Francisco, and let's see how they do against a MLS Next Pro team, and can they beat them? Yes, they can, right? I am so amazing stories, but that's my thing is that they're putting up basically barriers to not make it as easy as possible to watch these games, which is counterintuitive.
Yeah, and I do think it was more accessible than when it was on ESPN Plus because there were people who didn't have ESPN Plus subscriptions who were blocked out. And then last year was on Bleacher Report, which was terrible.
Oh, gosh.
This is much better than being on Bleacher Report. But your solution of YouTube is perfect. That's what sorry FIFA Plus, sorry pay streaming services. Like when you're trying to get something in front of as many people as possible, YouTube, Google, they've won the streaming wars in that sense. Go YouTube. There are other leagues. NISA is one of them that has put all their content on FIFA Plus. I still think that even though that's free, that's a barrier to entry, quite frankly. Just do YouTube. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And maybe I'm sure later in the rounds we'll see some better coverage in terms of more accessible coverage. And this thing was done so last minute anyway, so that we were lucky to even have them available through the websites. But let's go on. We've got two more comments about US Open Cup before we talk about streaming and some other topics. Dave says, thank you for taking the time to listen in and report on discussions about and outcomes related to the US Open Cup. Disappointing, but not surprising, that NFL billionaires won unconditional surrender from USSF. Everything there is to say has been said before. The NFL billionaires are what they are. USSF are what they are. Steve says, hey, Chris and Kartik, MLS has been disappointing as a league for a while, but I think everything that has happened in 2024 might be a bridge too far. MLS season passes, issues of price point and integration with non-Apple tech are well documented. Now it's not offered as part of the free T-Mobile plan either. That all would be begrudgingly acceptable, but the twin fiascos of scab referees, thank you, Kartik, for speaking out about this, and going down to only 8 MLS clubs entering the US Open Cup have nearly killed my interest in the league. I still check Chicago Fire scores and watch the odd highlights, but I'm not going to a match, and I'm not going to go pay for MLS season pass, at least until the real referees are brought back, maybe not even then. Not having the Chicago Fire in the Open Cup is a sad statement of affairs, given how important this has been to the history of the club, as Kartik noted, and my personal memories of attending the 2006 Open Cup final. The Fire made some good off-season moves and finally brought back their iconic red jerseys, but this season, in terms of attending matches, I'll be more focused on the Red Stars and grassroots Midwest Premier League clubs. I hope more MLS fans vote with their dollars and their feet as well.
You can feed your ambition.
You can find your balance.
You can focus on your craft.
You can work smarter. Make business energy effortless with U Energy. Get fast, tailored quotes, smart solutions to keep on top of your bills, and all your utilities in one place. Get a quote now at uenergy.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply. Full details can be found online.
They kept shouting at me, "Come back, Paula." I didn't hear them because the sound from the den was so loud.
A mining dam burst, sending toxic water pouring down over homes. 19 people were killed and the river polluted.
I'm Liz Bonin, and this is Dead River, the story of the Fundão Dam collapse, Brazil's worst environmental disaster on record.
We lost everything that day.
Subscribe to Dead River wherever you get your podcasts to hear new episodes as they're released.
And my name's Stan.
I'm Anne. Nice to meet you.
So you took up photography when?
I've always loved photography, but I turned it into earning a living.
That's right,
at 60.
Yeah.
I enrolled on a day course.
What, college?
Loved going to college.
It's good you can retrain and do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about working, learning, saving, and making the most of living longer. Phoenix Group is the UK's largest long-term savings and retirement business. Search Phoenix Group Living Longer.
That's the thing, Kartik. I mean, we could do whole episodes on the week in Don Garber, what Don Garber said this week, and just pull apart what he says, because oftentimes some of the things he says are just, I mean, like does he really think that? Is that what he really thinks? Or is he just saying that just to get a reaction?
Yeah, and now the Open Cup thing, okay, clearly they lost the PR battle, right? The thing I don't understand, and this is just PR 101, Chris, why do they keep talking about it? Why does Garber and Nelson Rodriguez then do this sit down with The Athletic where the entire conversation is about US Open Cup? Them giving their perspective, which has already clearly been rejected by the public. Why do they keep digging? When you take the L and move on. You got your way, even though it's a PR black eye. Just keep going. Why do they keep digging on this issue?
Honestly, though, I mean, I'm a big, I don't know, I disagree with a lot of the things The Athletic says and the way they position themselves. So I think Don Garber and Dan Cordemange going into a meeting with The Athletic and talking openly about, you know, all these things, I think, honestly, that they feel that they can influence The Athletic and try to turn some of these reporters over to the other side to get them to understand what their story is. And some of the things that were said in that Athletic interview where he was quoted, I would have dug deeper. If I was one of the reporters in that room, I would have said, okay, what do you mean by that? Because that does not, that's
you
not
ran
true.
The tournament for 18 years. What do you mean by that? Remember, right. That's the obvious comeback.
So The Athletic in many ways is very, very soft, in my opinion. I mean, obviously most of their audience in the US for soccer are fans of MLS clubs. So most of the stories they write about The Athletic in the US only are about Major League Soccer. So
or NWSL. They're even more in the tank for NWSL. That's another subject.
Not as much though, but most of the reporters are writing about MLS for the most part. Yeah. And so that's their audience. So they have to play nice in many ways with MLS and ensure that they will, if something happens, something controversial happens, they will report it. But there's a cozy relationship between The Athletic and Major League Soccer where if you and I were in the room or other independent journalists were in the room, we might ask some tough questions.
Based on what
they're saying. What's happening is The Athletic is basically re-reporting what Don Garber is saying and not editorializing what they're actually what Don Garber is saying.
Or context, right? So there's no context in those articles. But still, I don't understand from MLS's perspective why they would keep digging on an issue which is giving them a black eye. And in fact, I would say this week we had definitely more interest in the first round of the Open Cup than we've ever had. A lot of it was coming from MLS fans whose teams aren't even in the tournament this year.
Right.
Because they were trying to make a statement, right? In particular, I want to single out two fan bases that were really kind of active. I mean, Cincinnati fans were active in pushing back on the Open Cup, so they were active too. But fan bases who were active in a very positive sense, which were Chicago fans and St. Louis fans, were like, they were all into like adopting an amateur team and rooting against MLS next pro teams. And that was really kind of neat to see. And we know St. Louis fans staged a protest about Leagues Cup tickets because of what Leagues Cup has done to US Open Cup. So in fact, they're turning their own fans against them by continuing to talk about this. But you're right. Maybe they see The Athletic as more effective than just sticking a statement out on their website, right? Because it's effectively the same thing and maybe going to a bigger audience.
Yeah. And then plus the other thing too, I mean, so a lot of the coverage about MLS comes from MLSsoccer.com, right? It's their own writers. It's, or freelance writers that are writing for that website. So outside of MajorLeagueSoccer.com, is there much of a national coverage of the league? And it's not. It's more team specific or city specific. So you've got Jonathan Tannenwald writing about the Philadelphia Union. Well, he's not going to be writing that much about, you mean, LAFC or Colorado or Seattle or other teams at MLS. So from a national perspective, The Athletic I'm sure MLS looks at that and thinks, okay, hey, we can talk to them. We can be open with them. We won't tell them everything, but we'll have a dialogue with them. And they will, for the most part, write favorably about us and try to be fair. But at least we can try to influence that audience, because that will influence the national MLS conversation. And one of the things that Don Garber said, I mean, there's a long list of things from the last couple of weeks he's said, but just one of the things he said was to The Athletic, Don Garber says that the replacement referees are up to pro standard. Even though there's repeated mistakes, they're doing the best that they can, but how could you possibly say that? So he's saying these things, but the reason he's saying it is because they're in a situation where they're not willing to pay the PSRA officials, what they deserve. And Major League Soccer is kind of being cheap and unprofessional in the way that they're operating in terms of this one of many areas. All right, Kartik, let's move on. Next up is Wing Cake. And Wing Cake says, if Peacock and Paramount Plus merge, or Apple buys Max or Paramount Plus, how will that change that the landscape for soccer in the streaming world? And that's a great question, because there's been a lot of talk about mergers. I know that Peacock and Paramount Plus, and we haven't talked about much in a lot of detail, if Peacock and Paramount Plus merged, you mean, a lot of it's bundling, right? A lot of it's not so much that the two companies are going to merge together. It's not going to be that NBC Universal buy-in Paramount Global and all the properties, and it's more so kind of a bundle, like, hey, if you get Peacock, Paramount Plus will be combined with that, so you'll have all the access to most of the Premier League matches, Champions League matches, you mean Serie A, etc. You go down the list. So I think in many ways that is enticing for a lot of people too, right? If you have Paramount Plus, maybe it's an opportunity to get, and you don't have Peacock, maybe it's an opportunity to get Peacock at a discount rate because you're a Paramount Plus subscriber. I don't see Apple being interested in buying Max or Paramount Plus. I think Apple's doing their own thing, and maybe in the future they'll have some type of, they'll be interested in merging or acquiring somebody, and probably acquiring, not merging. But how will it change the landscape for soccer in the streaming world? That's a great question, Wing Cake, because I think for the consumer, it could be better in terms of, you mean, not having to subscribe to so many services. Maybe just subscribe to a Peacock Paramount Plus bundle where you're charged whatever you're charged per month. But that's the major advantage I see to the consumer side of things. Kartik, do you have anything different to add to
that? No, I think you pretty much covered it. It's just the bottom line is consolidation is inevitable in this industry. Whether it happens today or 6 months from now or 2 years from now, it's happening. There are too many streaming services. The direct-to-consumer model is has hit its kind of, you know, in economics, we learn about the law of diminishing returns. It's at that point. So there's going to be consolidation. What form it takes, we don't know. Although I think the Disney, Fox, Warner Discovery sports app is maybe the first sign that there is going to be these synergies between previously competing companies and that will eventually lead to full-on mergers.
And then the last comment in the listener mailbag is from Wild Stallion. Wild Stallion says, watching these CONCACAF Champions Cup highlights is kind of sad. We really need a full Western Hemisphere Copa Libertadores and Sudamericana. There's precedent with the way that the Asian Champions League is run as they split East and West until the final. I think the Copas can do that up until the semifinals. So for groups through quarterfinals, a North region can be CONCACAF plus Colombia and Venezuela. The rest of CONMEBOL can be the southern half. From the CONCACAF Champions Cup, we haven't talked about that, I don't think, Kartik, this year thus far. Have you watched many of the games, whether you have or not? I mean, what's been your impression in terms
of what you've seen? I've watched a fair amount of the games, and I find it hilarious that MLS complains about attendances at U.S. Open Cup matches when MLS teams, you know, St. Louis is an exception, they hosted a game, but MLS teams seem to have a hard time drawing for this competition also. I'm telling you, it's not easy to draw midweek games in cup competitions when you only have 2 or 3 weeks to market it. That's just a general principle. That's true in England, too, of the League Cup, actually. It's a midweek game, and it's outside of ticket packages for a lot of clubs, and the stadiums are half empty. So that's one takeaway. The second takeaway is I watched the Orlando game and the Philadelphia game, and I have said, even though we criticize MLS for business purposes, business and media and openness, transparency, I have said that I thought the gap between MLS and Liga MX had disappeared. I have to reassess that after watching those two ties. I mean, it was just, I can't even remember what the score, the aggregate score were in those two ties, but those matches were so one-sided. And those were better MLS teams. So,
I think part of it, though, too, I mean, really is that just with Leagues Cup as an example, right, it should be games played in Mexico and the US.
Yeah.
Having them played, I mean, at home in the US is unfair to the Mexican
teams.
That's
what I said about the Gold Cup, too. I mean, I know all these US national team fans say, well, oh, there are all these Mexican fans at the final. Same thing with this Nations League. But I am telling you, playing at home, you still, it's not just about the crowd. It's about the prep. It's about the hotels you stay at. It's about the training facilities. Okay, all of this stuff, you're still at home if you're an MLS team or you're the U.S. men's national team. You go to Mexico, the whole prep for a match is completely different than it is in the U.S. Even if the crowd is all supporting the Mexican clubs or the Mexican national team. I think that's a great point, Chris. Yeah, I had bought into. See, I mean, people say that I'm very anti-MLS, but maybe I bought into some of their propaganda. I believed because of Leagues Cup, the gap had disappeared. And then I watched the Orlando game. I watched both legs of the tie. The Philly game, it was just the second leg.
Yeah, Orlando was Tigres.
Yeah, against Tigres. I mean, that's a tough team to play, obviously. But, I mean, geez, it was embarrassing, really. Mm-hmm. And so you still have the potential of three MLS teams in the semifinals of four, but likely you're not going to have that. You might have one. I think, obviously, Inter Miami would be the one that potentially, Columbus could. I mean, but it's – I think the competition also, because of its timing, it being all midweek games, kind of takes on, you know, this lesser significance, But I mean, I guess UEFA Champions League is midweek also, but that's just different. And that has established itself, right? Unlike this, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I think we just called it CONCACAF Champions League. It's now called Cup again. So that's another thing. MLS is complaining about US Open Cup. Since some has marketed this tournament, they've changed the format and the name multiple times. It was a cup, then it became a league. In the CONCACAF Champions League era, they changed the format twice. And how you qualified and whether you played in, if you were from certain leagues. And now they've reverted it to back to being a cup competition. So, you know, if you don't establish a consistent format for this thing and let it kind of breathe, fans are not going to take it as seriously. We also saw some alarmingly low TV numbers from it, right? But that's, maybe that's to be expected with everything else we're seeing.
So I chuckled a minute ago, Kartik, because I just realized we were an hour and 10 minutes into this podcast. I think we were close to wrapping up, but we might have a little bit more to talk about. And the reason I was chuckling was because we haven't mentioned the one person's name at all during this entire podcast, and that is Senora Messi. I mean, if you're listening to MLS Season Pass, or you're watching MLS Season Pass, and you're listening to Jake Zivin and Taylor Swellman, or you mean listen to what Don Garber says, you mean the feeling that they're trying to tell us is that, oh my gosh, everyone is focused so much on Messi, like, you mean that basically, what has Don Garber said? He said something about the US is the ATM of the soccer world right now with the World Cup and with Messi and yes, that by yeah, yes, there's no doubt he's selling out stadiums, definitely packing crowds. Going back to the CONCACAF Champions Cup for a second, it was a rare moment where we got to see TV ratings for a game featuring Lionel Messi, because Apple still to this date is not releasing any numbers on viewership, how many people are actually watching games, other than kind of leaking some information about how many subscribers they had last year. Which was like 2 million. We don't know how many of those are still subscribed in 2024. Did they, now that the T-Mobile thing is no more, did they not renew, which we know there's a lot of people that didn't, or is there a whole bunch of new people coming in that didn't come in 2023? But in those two games, in the CONCACAF Champions Cup that I watched, it was the two legs between Nashville and Inter Miami, both of them. The first one was a better game than the second, but two MLS teams playing against each other. Yes, it was on FS2, which is, not the greatest channel by any means.
It's still on 60 million homes, though.
Yeah, or 54 million homes.
54, so it's come down a little bit, but yeah.
So So the first leg of the game was watched by a viewership, I think it was 138,000 people. And then the second game was 154,000 people. So that gives us an idea. I mean, that's not even apples to apples completely, but it gives us an idea of how much interest there is. I mean, when you have two MLS teams playing against each other, and one of them stars Lionel Messi, as well as Luis Suarez, Sergio Busquets, Jordi Alba, Mukhtar, etc. You got some really good players there. And yet the viewership is disappointing. You would imagine there's a lot more people tuning into
watch
those games.
Why isn't MLS marketing Mukhtar? I mean, maybe this is a subject for another podcast, but you know, in terms of guys who had an impact directly in their league, this is something that bothers me about MLS. You know, I go back through history, the Dwayne De Rosario's, now Mukhtar would be like an example of that, Carlos Gil. I mean, these are the guys that have had a direct impact in their league, and they never market those guys the way they market guys who come for a year or two.
Yeah, and he's a great player, really, really good player.
Yeah, really good player.
One that's really, you could tell, I mean, how skillful
he's a guy
he
I like
is.
Watching. I don't necessarily tune in to watch these guys who come over from Europe late in their careers, but a guy like Mukhtar, I was telling another journalist recently that I do watch Nashville. I mean, that's a team I watch because of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this goes back to the question of, I mean, how many people are actually watching games on MLS Season Pass? We know that as of the end of last year, they had 2 million subscribers. How many of those were free? You mean season ticket holders and T-Mobile subscribers or T-Mobile customers that signed up for it? And then 2024 is, you mean, no T-Mobile. And we don't know. I mean, how many people are actually watching the games? Now, I think MLS is definitely still focused on how many subscribers they have. That's really kind of what the measuring stick that they're using. They're not so worried about how many people are actually watching the games because, you mean, as long as you subscribe, that's all they care about, really. So, but it does make you wonder if, you mean, Inter Miami and Messi, you mean, the biggest name, the biggest names or biggest team in the league is getting that few number of viewers. How many people are watching, you mean, I don't know, FC Dallas or New England Revolution or, God forbid, FC Cincinnati, you mean, or St. Louis City, I mean, whoever it may be. And from my perspective too, I'm watching MLS Season Pass. I'm subscribed to MLS Season Pass. I'm watching it each week. I'm entertained. I watch it. I like it. I think the broadcasts have been great. The picture quality is fantastic. You mean the commentators for the most part are pretty good. Some better than others. They're not dreadful, but it's a good experience to watch it. But how many people are actually subscribing? We don't know. Kartik, do you have any thoughts on this before we wrap up?
But yeah, I don't think it's as high as it was last season. And there were less than 54 million people subscribed to MLS Season Pass in the U.S. So if people say, oh, that game was on FS2 or whatever, it's still on broadcast television. It's still in prime time broadcast television. I know FS1 and FS2 tend to get lower ratings than ESPN. Does, but right. Still, right, ESPN or ESPN2, but it's a bad sign. And the last point is that I have gotten two things this week. I think you might report on them at World Soccer Talk. Two solicitations to get free trials, again, of MLS Season Pass. 4 weeks into the, 4 and a half weeks into the season. So, if it's going swimmingly, these things would not have popped up this week. And it was ironic. They popped up right in the middle of U.S. Open Cup. And so my reaction was, heck no. But then I realized I'm covering USL. I cover NISA. I have to cover MLS Next Pro because, you know, just to be fair, and a lot of those players, there was a lot of player movement from Next Pro to USL and vice versa and to NISA. So and NPSL. So I have to cover that league. I'm going to have to subscribe because they put all of MLS season. They put all of MLS Next Pro behind the Apple paywall. Whereas USL, we know there are going to be games on CBS. We know there are going to be games on ESPN. We know in most of these local markets, the games are on linear television. So MLS is forcing some of us to pay for it. Unfortunately, that are in the business.
Yeah, I think with MLS, it's the same problems we have now that we've always had. And because I was going to ask you, like, hey, and I think I've asked you this before too, is what can MLS do to really kind of change MLS Season Pass in terms of making it a must-have subscription? Yes, it's expensive, but what can they change to make it like a must-have subscription product?
They would buy rights to, now I think the only thing they can do is some buy the rights, because some can do this technically, buy the rights of the Bundesliga in the U.S. La Liga's locked up. Buy the rights to Serie A, that's up this year. Buy the rights to Liga A and throw it as part of the package. Because, Chris, something anecdotal, but this is something that has come up in the last couple of weeks, and I've actually pushed back against it. So for people who think I'm just totally biased against MLS and have an agenda, it's not true. There are people who've told me, you know, I'm watching USL this year because I signed up for Paramount Plus to watch Champions League, or I signed up for ESPN to watch La Liga, and it's on there, and I don't want to watch MLS. And, you know, and some of these people are what the earlier commenter would describe as a Euro snob. Hey, you know, I don't think the soccer in the U.S. is that good anyway, so I really can't tell the difference between MLS and USL. I will tell you there is a difference, although I think USL is pretty good. I think there are, every MLS team has 3 or 4 DPs that make it a better league than USL, although beyond that, the standard is kind of similar. But I've heard from, I would say, a half dozen people who say, I'm just not going to watch MLS. I'm getting USL with this package because I've signed up to watch another league, a European league. So that's why I'm saying maybe that's a suggestion for Apple now and for MLS. Either Apple gets those rights and packages it with Season Pass, or MLS itself, some goes and buys the Liga A rights right now, which are up in the U.S., goes and buys the Serie A rights, which are up this year in the U.S., goes and buys the Bundesliga rights, which are up in 2 years. Make it all part of MLS Season Pass. Force the European fan or the Eurocentric fan to buy MLS Season Pass. And then once they do that, and then you expose them to your product, they see how good it is.
I like the idea. I like the idea a lot, but I don't think it's going to happen because Apple is so stubborn. They're married to this, hey, any league that we want to get, it has to be global rights. And Major League Soccer is the rarity. It's hardly any, if any, leagues in the world that would be willing or in a position where they could go ahead and give the global rights to one broadcaster. It's a risky move. And that's something that Don Garber said too, that there is risk in this deal between Apple and MLS, in that, Apple will pay MLS more rights revenue if MLS can exceed the minimum guarantee, whatever the minimum guarantee of subscribers is, we don't know, but they haven't hit that yet. So my thing is, as far as if you're going to fix MLS Season Pass, well, not that there's anything broken with MLS Season Pass, but if you're going to fix MLS, that's the issue, is you blow the whole thing up, right? You do it, a split season, you do Apertura, you do Clausura, you do two halves of a season, you make the whole season meaningful. For someone right now, it's the end of March, who wants to subscribe to MLS Season Pass, what's the incentive, right? It's, yes, it's fun, entertaining, it's expensive, but it's entertaining. But is there a reason to keep watching it week in, week out, if you have a playoff system at the very end? That happens in late August, early September. That's a long way to go to kind of keep someone, hold their attention for that long. So if you split the season, you have a spring champion and a fall champion, and then in the MLS Cup final, you have the spring versus the fall champion against each other, and then you have Leagues Cup in the middle of the summer to kind of break it up in between the Apertura and Clausura. You've got an opportunity to keep people entertained. There'll be more trophies available, more incentives, more like must-win games. Right now, it just seems that, for the most part, it's just, it's early in the season. But this same thing has been happening year after year after year that we've been talking about, is that there's that early season buzz. And after about a month to 2 months, then it's like, okay, why should I keep on watching? Because there's more interesting things happening, whether it's promotion relegation battles, or it's cup matches, or it's the Euros, right? Or the Copa America.
And it's also summer, so this is the fundamental thing. There's someone who told me recently, a journalist, that the standard of MLS is much higher than people think it is. And I say, yeah, I agree. I think if you watch an MLS game in March or early April, The standard appears to be as good as most leagues in Europe. But then if you watch an MLS game in June or July, when it's really hot in this country has extreme climate. There's thunderstorms and there's all sorts of match delays and the guys, you know, have to go back into the dressing room and then they don't get a full warm up and they're playing at 9:30 instead of 7:30. The games look like garbage. So MLS, if they did Apertura Clausura, they could effectively cherry pick the times of year where the product looks better, where it's competing with less stuff and make it relevant. But you know, all these suggestions you give and I give, they just seem to fall on deaf ears. I mean, everything you're saying, I agree with. But, and in fact, I do think the standard in MLS is higher at certain times of the year than people give it credit for being. You know, they might turn on a game in the middle of July in Orlando when it's 100 degrees and even hotter on the field and say, oh, this is garbage. But it's not like that the whole season. But and also those games in the summer mean nothing, right? That's the other thing, because the season is so long. That's the and so many teams get into the playoffs, as you mentioned. So all of these things they need to be considering. Now that they're tied to this Apple deal, one thing I have been told, Chris, is because they have a long-term media partner, maybe they'll get more creative with their formats. That they've always been very conservative with this because they were concerned about the next television deal. And they were concerned about what ESPN would say and whether they would get bumped for college football or get bumped for Major League Baseball or something. Now they apparently, you know, they have this media partner. It's a 10-year deal. This is, you know, 9 more years. So they can get creative if they want. Let's see if they do it.
Yeah. And Don Garber has mentioned that he's considering our idea of Apertura and Clausura for MLS in the future, as well as many other things that they have, even different committees that are focused on trying to figure out ways to improve things. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, but you're right, Kartik, as far as having this long-term deal where they know that they've got Apple for another, 9 years, that this is a long relationship, but they need to make it work because this is not like the ESPN, Univision, Fox deal that they had before where, they didn't care as much about the TV ratings. Yes, they would like them to be bigger, but now that they're incentivized to make more money if they're able to get this right and get more subscribers I'd like to see MLS be as aggressive with the way that their league is structured as they have been with Leagues Cup in terms of establishing that from the ground up, as well as being as aggressive as they are about pulling out of the US Open Cup. They have a lot of wheels in motion to make those things happen. Even MLS is back. MLS is back. It was a revolutionary competition that they did during the pandemic with the help of ESPN, definitely. But they have a partner, Apple, who's willing to help. So it's risky, but I think they have to do something. They have to do something to get people interested week in, week out. And then eventually that'll lead to subscriptions. Because what they're doing now, I'm entertained. But I can guarantee you that I'm the minority, as you are, Kartik, too. There's a lot of people out there that are not willing to watch or not willing to subscribe, even if they do free weekends and they do a free trial. I mean, it's not good enough. They need to have a reason.
One thing they're doing, I do have to give them credit for this, even though I don't like it necessarily, maybe from the perspective of wanting to see USL be successful. They're moving reserve teams out of market. They've just done that with a couple of them in the last couple of weeks. And I think that forces people in another market to potentially sign up for MLS Next Pro. And one of my MLS Season Pass, one of my criticisms of MLS is that I think the fan base is very much tied to certain geographic places. And they are not the league because it's not an open system, or because the league doesn't talk about anything else in the U.S. has not made itself relevant to people in Omaha or Des Moines or in Greenville, South Carolina. And USL is very relevant in those places. So people are watching USL. By moving some of these reserve teams out of market and putting MLS Next Pro teams in other places, filling the map up, they will incentivize people to sign up for season pass. But the price point may still be the obstacle at that point. But they'll at least be more relevant to more people around the country as they do this. I think it was trial balloons, the Ventura County move for Galaxy 2 and the Oakland move for for San Jose too. But I think we're going to see more and more of that. I really think that, that they know they need to do that in order to get more people in the door for Apple.
Yeah, I'm a perfect example of that too, where I lived in South Florida for like 35 years. We saw the Miami Fusion for a short period of time when they were in existence. But after they went out of business and were contracted, there was, what, 20 years with no Major League Soccer team in South Florida? And then
and we had lower division teams the whole time then. So people like gradually. I mean, so for me, for example, I mean, if the Fusion hadn't contracted, I mean, I'm into all this lower division stuff. But if I, if their Fusion had been in existence the whole time and there hadn't been a USL team that popped up when the Fusion contracted and then in NASL started all of that, I don't want to get into that. But if there hadn't been a lower division professional team, which there wouldn't have been, if the Fusion hadn't contracted, I wouldn't have been sucked into lower division soccer. So, I mean, just think about that, from a front office perspective.
It's a sliding doors moment, Kartik.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I could be the biggest MLS fans.
We could be doing an MLS podcast,
like saying, like, isn't this great?
We could be working in MLS, actually. I might have been in an MLS front office. I ended up in a USL and NASL front office because MLS had left town. It's really kind of how, so again, MLS isn't relevant to people outside of MLS markets, is the point.
Yeah, the point you
and I are both trying to make.
So they 20 years of not having an MLS team in South Florida, then one is formed, but I move to a different part of Florida where there's no MLS team.
And I already have the USL team I worked for that's still in existence. I mean, this is the third team I've worked for, but a team I've most recently worked for, that's a USL team. So why is MLS going to say to me, hey, you should switch and support Inter Miami, even though they play much closer to where I live, and abandon your club, Miami FC? I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I have no intention of doing that. So that's another thing, right? You know, you come in on top of an existing club in a market you've already left.
And then going back to your point, too, about that, you mean MLS, which was my point from a few podcasts ago about MLS is wanting to control club soccer from the top to bottom. And so going into different markets, going ahead, MLS Next Pro, and trying to get it, I mean, basically trying to control the whole, what they call a pyramid, which is not a pyramid, but trying to control it from top to bottom where they own everything, right? So if you're, for me, not living anywhere near an MLS team, I mean, that MLS Next Pro team, I mean, may become an MLS team, and I mean, there's opportunities for MLS to grow across those areas of the country where there are no MLS teams, and to have maybe a second division or a third division team there. So it's still MLS. They're still generating revenue for Major League Soccer,
and
you're still consuming it, and it's still Apple. Yeah, that's true.
That's the key thing. That I was thinking about more from that TV perspective, from getting people to sign up than anything else. But I guess it just helps the context of the league in general.
All right, Kartik. So I think we got a lot in common after all. You mean in terms of like what we've been watching and what we can talk about? Because there's a lot of commonality. And listeners too. I mean, I think no matter what leagues you watch, I think a lot of the things we're talking about are things that you can relate to too, because I mean, it is an interesting place living in this country, having so much access to so many games from around the world, at the same time having so much access to local teams throughout the pyramids, and that fight for survival, which in many ways is summed up with the US Open Cup, is being kind of a almost like a do or die competition for a lot of these clubs. Fascinating topics. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions, or rants or raves. There's a bunch of different ways you can reach out to us. It's the website, worldsoccertalk.com, and then click on podcasts and leave your comments in the most recent episode. Twitter, @worldsoccertalk. You can tweet us there. YouTube.com/worldsoccertalk. Post your comments on those episodes. Facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. You can message us there. And the voicemail is 561-247-4625. You can leave that on the voicemail and we will play it in a future episode. I think that covers, oh no, email. You can email questions or feedback to web@worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, where can they find you on Beyond the 90, and what coverage can they expect to read there?
Yeah, beyondthe90.substack.com. Heavy U.S. Open Cup. We transitioned back to covering USL and NISA whenever it starts. It was supposed to start this weekend, but it hasn't started. NPSL, UPSL, and USL League 2, USL Super League on the women's side, and USLW League on the women's side we cover, as well as trying to kind of deepen our coverage of Serie A and La Liga, as well as some other European topics. I've given up on the Bundesliga. Just real aside about Beyond the 90, Chris, because obviously we track the numbers of any article we write. Consistently, anything I write about the Bundesliga gets less opens and less reads than any other topic. You can talk about like a sixth division team playing in a local regional league here in Central Florida, and that will get more opens than something about the Bundesliga. So maybe it's just the audience we cultivated, but there's seems to be no interest in the Bundesliga. So we're not going to be covering that anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Bundesliga fans are going to those Bundesliga blogs, right?
Like, yeah.
Was it Bavarian Football Works and a lot of Bundesliga-centric blogs where there's some great content there.
I did an article about a 8th division team that plays in South London that got more opens than any Bundesliga article.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, Kartik. All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. It's been a long one, but hopefully it's been worth it. And we shall be back probably in a couple of weeks. This has been a long one, but it's been a good one. Enjoy your football.
Jules.
Hiya.
Yoga teacher.
I can move from an eagle to a tree in seconds. But managing my budget to provide for my family today and in the future. Tough balancing act.
Thankfully, Aviva can help. With life insurance from £5 per month, you can help protect your loved ones.
And breathe.
Search Aviva Life. Helping solve your life insurance puzzles. It takes Aviva. The price you pay depends on the cover chosen in your personal circumstances.
My name's Stan.
I'm Anne. Nice to meet you.
So you took up photography when?
I've always loved photography, but I turned it into earning a living.
That's
at
right,
60.
Yeah.
I enrolled on a day course.
Well, college?
I loved going to college.
It's good you can retrain and do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about working, learning, saving and making the most of living longer. Phoenix Group is the UK's largest long-term savings and retirement business. Search Phoenix Group Living Longer.
Do you hear that? It might sound like nothing to you, but it's actually the sound of nuclear, wind, and solar energy. At EDF, we're busy generating more British zero carbon electricity than anyone to help keep future energy costs down for everyone and help cut UK carbon emissions to nothing. Sound good to you? Find out more about our zero carbon generation at edfenergy.com/helpingbritain.
They kept shouting at me, "Come back, Paula." I didn't hear them because the sound from the den was so loud.
A mining dam burst, sending toxic water pouring down over homes. 19 people were killed and the river polluted.
I'm Liz Bonin and this is Dead River, the story of the Fundão Dam collapse, Brazil's worst environmental disaster on record.
We lost everything that day.
Subscribe to Dead River wherever you get your podcasts to hear new episodes as they're released.